Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today, the second part of Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, exploring three more ways the American media lie and distort the truth, especially when reporting on Israel and Palestine. PR strategy number two, invisible colonization. Professor Karen Pfeiffer.
Once we know that the occupation is illegal, and we know that it's subject to international condemnation, and it's very costly in terms of lives and money, then we have to ask why Israel continues to maintain the occupation. And the reason is because it intends to annex the territories eventually.
For decades, Israel has been colonizing Palestinian land by building settlements on that land. The settlements are in contravention of the Fourth Geneva Convention that forbids the transfer of population into land colonized by illegal force. The settlements are dotted throughout the Palestinian territories and are set up strategically, often on hilltops, to give Israel military control of the land and its natural resources, namely water. The settlements, together with the surrounding land that they have expropriated, control over 40% of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. The Israeli settlements are Jewish-only settlements, and they are linked together by a network of bypass roads that carve up the West Bank, restricting Palestinians' freedom of movement, and that simultaneously link the settlements to Israel proper. The strategic placement of the Israeli settlements and the bypass roads can be described as an Israeli matrix of control over the occupied territories.
The purpose of the settlements, the purpose of the bypass roads, is in the end to create a web of control that will make Israel a permanent possessor of the territory, and the rights and interests and concerns of the indigenous people of the land, the Palestinians, the big majority, are not of interest here.
Given that Israel's goal is eventual annexation of the occupied territories, the settlements, of course, are a means to attaining that goal, but they would appear to be threatening colonies if they were presented in their true light. So better to hide their identity to sanitize the language that describes them.
British journalist Robert Fisk.
CNN sent out a memorandum to its staff in the Middle East. In future, Gilo is to be called a neighborhood.
The Jewish neighborhood of Gilo on the outskirts of Jerusalem.
The Israeli neighborhood Gilo.
Gilo, a Jewish neighborhood in East Jerusalem.
Now, there's a great deal of difference between a colony, which is what the settlement is, colon, as the French say, and a neighborhood. A settlement, an Israeli settlement, is built for Jews and Jews only on Arab land, and it's illegal, against international law. A neighborhood is just a nice, friendly place.
This is southern Jerusalem, a quiet neighborhood. And while the only thing beating down on me right now is the rain, bullets frequently rain in this area, which is the reason those Israeli tanks are right back there.
So by pressuring journalists into changing the use of words, by making them alter their lexicon, by linguistically changing the narrative story, not only are the journalists kept in line, this is the language, this is the system of linguistics you must use, but it also successfully takes away from one side in the dispute, the Palestinians, the reasons why they act in the way they do, whether we approve of it or say that it's a wicked thing.
When we look at the British press, which remains pretty independent of the Israeli public relations machine, you get a very different story about the settlements. They emphasize both the illegality and their vital importance in the conflict.
BBC America News Story.
They look like ordinary Israeli neighborhoods, suburban, modern, and comfortable. But the Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip are now the key issue in the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis. There are something like 200,000 Israelis living on land captured from the Palestinians in the war of 1967. The government knows it's under intense pressure to stop expanding the settlements, which are illegal under international law. But the people left with no choice are the Palestinians. They see every new Israeli building on occupied land as a gross violation of their sovereignty, and they insist that the Israelis must stop all building.
In contrast to British coverage, in American news coverage, the settlements are downplayed, and questions regarding their legality are rarely raised. In fact, there are times when they're flat-out legitimized and defended.
Israeli settlements are so interspersed throughout Palestinian territory that a border around them all would be too long to defend. And evacuating Jewish settlements, even those deep inside the territories, is politically impossible, at least for now.
What American reports tend to obscure is the fact that the Israeli government has promoted the settlements as part of a strategy.
BBC.
The right is in government and armed with bulldozers, expanding in the West Bank and Gaza, staking a claim to the land, making space for new immigrants whose numbers are meant to counter the fast-growing Arab population.
The insertion of a large Israeli population in certain areas gives the Israeli government a rationalization for refusing to relinquish control and to give Israel a argument that this part of the occupied territories has become so Israeli, has so many Jews living in it, that it simply has to be annexed to the state of Israel, which is why you can see East Jerusalem completely ringed by a pattern of heavily fortified Israeli settlements designed to cut East Jerusalem off from the rest of the West Bank for the permanent domination and eventual annexation of, at the very least, key areas, if not, in the end, the whole thing.
The settlements are illegitimate by international law, but what's worse is that many of the occupants of the settlements, their founders and people who live there today, are very aggressive toward Palestinians. They go around fully armed, submachine guns, they carry grenades, and they frequently threaten Palestinians.
In Hebron, settlers initiated more clashes. They say they're tired of coming under attack. But their communities are illegal under international law.
They set fire to Palestinian fields, smashed cars, and vandalized shops. And all this during what's still being called officially a ceasefire.
Settlers have vowed to intensify protests against the ceasefire. They want Ariel Sharon to hit back. Some of them have already carried out their own vigilante attacks on Arab villages.
They're sitting 100,000 settlers in little settlements all over the West Bank, inside or very near Palestinian places, and they're treating the Palestinians in patronized way, violent way. They're not saying live and let to live. They're trying to take from the Palestinians their dignity, their land, their homes, their traditional way of life.
Israeli colonization of Palestinian land has been a twofold process. On the one hand, Israel has been constructing Jewish-only settlements on Palestinian land. On the other, Israel has taken various measures to drive Palestinians out. One way this has been done is by demolishing Palestinian homes. In 2.5 years since the outbreak of the Intifada, Israel has demolished over 1,000 Palestinian homes, making thousands of civilians homeless.
It's a large-scale process of demolishing the homes of Palestinians in order to effect what Israel is largely about, which is controlling the territory, making life uncomfortable for the Palestinians, making Palestinians leave their homes on the West Bank. It's tacitly a gradual ethnic cleansing process.
Rabbi Arik Asherman of Israel.
If you are a Palestinian family and you have clear and uncontested title to your land even, a clear security record, you can stand on your head, and in most cases, you're not going to get a legal building permit. Then you build, if you go ahead and have to build in any case, for demographic reasons, what have you, you build an illegal home, and it's subject to demolition. And thousands of people have been made homeless this way, and today there are at least 2,000 standing demolition orders, and of course each of those orders represents a family. So basically land which belonged to Palestinian families for generations was now considered state land.
This was home to 15 people, 11 of them children. Too much for Ziad al-Hirbawi to take, he helped build the house with his own bare hands. This is the baby's food, a relative says. Israel, what are you doing? It was making a family homeless. They had no permit to build, but for Palestinians in Jerusalem, permits are almost impossible to get.
If you watch American coverage, Israel's demolition of Palestinian homes is presented as simply enforcement of the law. What we don't see is how the law is unequally applied in order to steal Palestinian land.
Israeli bulldozers demolished two Palestinian homes under construction in East Jerusalem. The Israelis said the owner had no building permit. In Gaza today...
The demolition of Palestinian homes is done on the excuse that they're not legal, that they don't have permits to be built, when in reality this is a way of clearing Palestinians from the land, making it impossible for them to live there, pushing more and more of them off in order to be able to claim the land for Israel.
PR strategy number 3, violence in a vacuum.
Palestinian resistance to the occupation has been both nonviolent and violent. Some of the violent resistance has been aimed at Israeli soldiers and civilians in the occupied territories, and some has been spilling over into Israel proper in the form of suicide bombers.
Scene of chaos and destruction, rescue workers rushing to search for the living among the carnage. The center had been packed. It was just before the Jewish Sabbath. Now shoppers lay dead on the street, victims of a suicide bomber. This woman came looking for her loved ones, not knowing if they were alive or dead. There was no mercy here today, no thought about the baby inside this pushchair, but the infant did survive the slaughter.
This was a devastating attack on innocent civilians, and Israelis have reason to fear more days like this. Islamic extremists say they have other suicide bombers who are ready and waiting to do just what this one did.
I was very close to the pizzeria bombing in Jerusalem in August of last year, and I got there, you know, faster than the police did. And I saw an Israeli baby without a head, a woman with a chair leg sticking out of her chest. My reporting, for example, I'm pretty brutal about suicide bombers. I call them wicked. And I say that, I use the word. But I also make a point of saying, why?
Rabbi Michael Lerner of the United States.
When you have a population that is being occupied, when their fundamental human rights are being systematically denied, when they're not allowed to move from city to city or from place to place without huge amount of harassment, when they're being subject to torture, when people are essentially in desperate conditions, it's not a surprise that they're going to be very, very, very angry.
They feel so helpless in the face of a powerful Israeli army that some Palestinians think the only answer, and I condemn this, but some Palestinians think the only response to a powerful army is a guerrilla tactic going into Israel and setting bombs off in cities. And there's increasing support for this among Palestinians because of the growing frustration of not getting anywhere.
They're doing it with horrible means. It's something inhuman. I totally condemn it. But we have to understand that these are the effects of the occupation.
In the non-American coverage, BBC, for example, the suicide bombings are generally put in the context of the occupation, that they are a response to conditions which are very dehumanizing to Palestinians and against which they are defenseless.
The attack, a reply to Ariel Sharon's devastating airstrikes. We found the bomber's family in their modest house near Bethlehem. Not militants or gunmen, just ordinary people.
Ariel Sharon has made good on his threat of a huge military offensive.
And this may be the only result. More Palestinian attacks, not less. A suicide bombing in this supermarket today. Just what Sharon is trying to stop. But all the tanks in the world are no substitute for a political settlement. Today's bomber was not prepared to wait. Here, a brief glimpse of her face. Not a hardened fighter, but a girl of 16.
But there is absolutely no understanding on the part of the American media, and hence on the part of the American population that's educated by that media, about what creates this circumstance.
MSNBC investigates the mind of a suicide bomber. So hard for us to understand why they would be willing to sacrifice their lives in this way.
Israel occupies. people strike at Israel against that occupation. They use means that I think are wrong means, namely the terror, and then Israel imposes punishment on the entire Palestinian people, which then generates a climate in which it's much easier for the terrorists to recruit.
Praying when we arrived, the men who believe in suicide bombings, all our senior militants, the kind Arafat has promised to arrest. They kept their guns by their sides for our meeting. At the end of the day, Arafat will have to halt the arrests, says this man, who's on Israel's most wanted list. He can't stop us resisting the Israeli occupation.
The Israeli security cabinet has agreed to still further intensify its operations in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. It's difficult to see, though, how such a move can fail to provoke still more Palestinian attacks.
In contrast to the international press, in American media, there's a reversal of cause and effect in that the occupation is framed as a response to suicide bombings.
The Israelis moved into the occupied territories to root out the suicide bombers.
The Israelis are now stationed in force all over the West Bank, their iron grip designed to prevent suicide bombers getting through.
And it's true that, you know, Israelis do feel insecure, and they have very good legitimate reasons for feeling insecure. But overwhelmingly, reporters will see the source of the insecurity they feel as Palestinian hatred, is a word that you see all the time. That this conflict isn't motivated by a struggle over power, or over land or territory, but simply by Palestinian hatred.
A Palestinian man emerged from a taxi on a busy shopping street in downtown Jerusalem with a machine gun in his hands and hate in his eyes.
If the occupation is invisible, as it's been rendered by how the United States government looks at this and how that's echoed in the media in many cases, then the reason for the frustration seems nonsensical, and therefore they're just inherently upset people or violent people and so on. It's either in their genes or in their culture.
Neither the best intention of the Saudis nor the power of the Israelis could stop another young zealot willing to die so he could kill Jews on Passover.
It's spun in such a way so as to justify Israeli occupation.
Israeli soldiers say their actions are justified. They use suicide bombers, he said. We use tanks.
Yes, Israelis are being shot at and killed. And so, yes, Israel does have real defense needs. At the same time, defense in Israel, in particular, has become this mantra. And once people hear the word defense, they stop thinking. And so, all too often, anything can be called defense and then justified.
Israeli bulldozers and tanks moved into the refugee camp at 2 in the morning. 2 hours later, 54 Palestinian homes had been flattened. The raid was widely seen as retaliation for the deaths of 4 Israeli soldiers yesterday.
Israel is always cast itself, and is always cast by the media, as reactive, as simply responding to Palestinian aggression. Israel strikes back against terror. Israel retaliates. Israel responds. Palestinians attack. Israel retaliates.
A day of Palestinian attacks and Israeli retaliation.
Israel resumed its retaliation.
Violence could escalate over the coming days as Israel retaliates.
Calling Palestinian actions attacks and Israeli actions retaliation is meaningful. Retaliation suggests a defensive stance in response to violence initiated by someone else. It places a responsibility for the violence on the party provoking the retaliation. In other words, Palestinian violence, like suicide bombings, is seen as aggression and thus as the cause and the origin of the conflict.
Secretary of State Colin Powell.
That's what has caused this crisis to come upon us, not the absence of a political way forward, but terrorism in its rawest form.
Since the September 11th attacks on the U.S., Israel's PR strategy has been to frame all Palestinian actions, violent or not, as terrorism. To the extent that they can do that, they've repackaged an illegal military occupation as part of America's war on terrorism.
This is Israel's war on terrorism. F-16s hit a Palestinian police station in the Gaza Strip this morning.
The case the Israelis are trying to make, this is no different than what the U.S. is doing in Afghanistan.
Prime Minister Ariel Sharon declared on national television tonight that he was determined to root out what he called the terrorist infrastructure in the Palestinian territories.
Terror, terror.
The Israeli Prime Minister Sharon said his nation has taken many steps to cooperate in the search for peace, but the only thing it's had in return is terrorism, terrorism, and more terrorism.
Israel has made Americans empathize with its position by linking itself emotionally to Americans' 9/11 experience, making a connection where there really isn't one. It's been breathtaking how American journalists have allowed themselves to be manipulated in this way.
A New York delegation toured suicide bombing sites in Israel today. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani said the people of Jerusalem and New York City stand shoulder to shoulder against terrorism.
PR strategy number 4, defining who is newsworthy.
In nearly 3 years since the outbreak of the Intifada, over 500 Israeli civilians have been killed, most inside Israel by Palestinian suicide bombers. On the Palestinian side, over 2,000 civilians have been killed, most in the occupied territories by Israeli soldiers. Yet, while many innocent people have died on both sides, not all are considered newsworthy in the American media.
There have been periods where almost no Israelis have been killed, and large numbers of Palestinians have been killed. Those periods have been referred to routinely by the American press as periods of relative calm. What that means is it's relatively calm if only Arabs are dying.
In August 2002, news outlets were reporting a period of relative quiet.
Relative quiet has held in the West Bank town of Bethlehem.
What the reports failed to mention was that during the same time period, 39 Palestinian civilians were killed. 24 of them were women and children.
The media presents the situation as being somehow there are victims on both sides, but the Israeli victims are nearer, dearer.
For example, when in March 2002, 29 Israelis were killed in Netanya by a suicide bomber, that killing was rightly labeled a massacre.
But how much the Palestinians may be suffering is not the main Israeli concern now. They'll be burying the 28th victim tomorrow from the Netanya Passover massacre.
However, when a few weeks later, at least as many Palestinian civilians have been killed, when Israeli forces invaded Jenin, an event that was widely condemned as a war crime by human rights organizations, American news outlets downplayed the event and questioned and dismissed the possibility of a massacre.
U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell said today he has seen no evidence of a massacre.
They're still digging at the rubble of Jenin, still trying to get to the bottom of what really happened here.
Palestinians claim that in Jenin, hundreds of bodies are buried under the rubble in the center of the town. The Israeli army says that the death toll there is only a matter of a few dozen.
In the American media, on television, of course, but even in sophisticated media like the New York Times, Israelis, whether they're Israeli citizens or settlers or soldiers, are presented in a very humane, human way, a way in which Americans can identify with them.
23 Israeli soldiers were killed in the fighting. One of them was Mark and Rena Robinson's 21-year-old son, Matanya. His name means God's gift.
There's a saying in Hebrew, God gives and God takes, and he took them.
You have, for example, an Israeli soldier who's on Palestinian territory shooting Palestinians. If he gets injured or killed, immediately you get the fullness of his humanity. You go to his funeral, you see his grieving mother or wife or child. You learn a lot, his name, his hopes, his dreams, where he came from, and so on. And yet you have, you know, hundreds and thousands of Palestinians killed. And you never get to know their name. You never get to see a funeral. You're not exposed to the grief of the family. You don't know that these children, probably many of them, were shot in their own homes, in their own backyards, or on the way to school. It doesn't matter. They become part of the abstraction. You know, 400 Palestinians killed. That's it. It's a number.
In the West Bank, a car explosion killed 3 Palestinians.
6 Palestinians were killed and 45 wounded by Israeli troops in various incidents.
there's no attention paid to the Palestinian victims when an Israeli missile hits a building and kills collaterally a number of Palestinians. It's as if that's the price that has to be paid.
The F-16s leveled several Palestinian security buildings, killed 12 Palestinian policemen.
A funeral for a Palestinian killed with two of his children in an explosion yesterday.
There's no in-depth empathy. There's no superficial empathy for the fact that these were innocent people who are being killed.
In the West Bank town of Ramallah, an Israeli tank destroyed a pickup truck belonging to Abu Quaik. He wasn't in it. His wife and three of his children were. They were all killed, and so were two other children nearby.
This, you know, sort of blowing up of a car and using missiles against people who, you know, raining death from the skies is something normal. It's part of the procedure.
The Israelis say they used the F-16s because they can do more damage. Tonight, they hit the Palestinians hard.
Tonight in Gaza, Israeli helicopter gunships lit up the night sky.
Israel attacked Palestinian targets with F-16 warplanes, killing 11 people.
So this normalization of the horror and the exclusion of the human dimension has become part of the ongoing policy.
About 20 Palestinians were killed today as Israeli warplanes, troops, and tanks targeted Palestinian militants.
Israeli soldiers fired on Palestinians violating the military curfew. At least four were killed.
There are other ways of reporting on Palestinian victims. In fact, when you look at the British press, the ways in which the Palestinian victims are dismissed and downplayed in the American media, the ways in which their deaths are justified in American coverage, becomes even more glaring. A really clear example of this is the BBC story on six Palestinian kids killed by an Israeli booby trap and one the next day by Israeli soldiers.
Five small bodies on their way to the grave, carried shoulder high, a martyr's funeral in Gaza for the dead schoolboys. Sources in the Israeli government and security services have admitted they were probably the victims of an Israeli booby trap. Victims who died side by side, two sets of brothers and a cousin, all members of one devastated Palestinian family, the Alastals. Naeem lost his oldest son and his youngest, who was only six. Both good boys, he told me, who never gave any trouble. This Israeli minister wants a full inquiry, but claims it wasn't a civilian area.
Civilians are not there. I stood there. That's exactly what
minister,
was stated.
I stood there yesterday. This is an area where children pass to go to school. This is an area where people cultivate. I have stood there and I have seen it. Now, is it appropriate that a roadside bomb should be planted in this place?
That's exactly what will be investigated. That's exactly what will be investigated.
Even as he spoke, Palestinians say another child was killed in Gaza. They claim Israeli forces fired on these stone throwers, killing a 15-year-old called Wael. The army denies it.
If you look at the American coverage from the same day, you'd struggle to think of it as even the same event. The report practically blames the victims for their own deaths.
In Gaza, a Palestinian teenager was killed in a clash with Israeli troops following the funerals of five boys. They died Thursday when one of them kicked an unexploded tank shell.
There's antiseptic language, there's cleaned up language that does not show the human reality of the substance and does not really show the inherent injustice in the situation.
It is possible for journalists and media outlets committed to independence and balance to show the humanity of both Israelis and Palestinians.
BBC America.
The army insists it only returned fire today when its troops were in danger, but it was two Palestinian teenagers who were killed. This mother lost her eldest son. Shadi Siam was just 18, deaf, unable to speak, unable to protect himself. Just like 6-year-old Sasha Surkin. Months ago, his family left Russia for Israel. Last Friday, they were victims of a suicide bombing attack. So far, Sasha hasn't asked for his father. Hospital staff believe inside he already knows he's dead.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes to you from WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed are mine alone Check us out at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Ciao!